We are wearing the House Health Care.
Let's reconvene the House Committee on Health Care, meeting jointly with the Senate Committee.
And I'd like to call to order the Senate Committee on Health Care and Veterans Affairs. It's Wednesday, March 25th, 6 p.m.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's holding the clock. I know. They do that in Washington. And I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2009.
And with that, this is for the benefit, I'm sure, of your committee, but the House hasn't, the Senate has not been able to hear anything about 2009 as such.
Officially.
Officially. So this is our official introduction to 2009, and I will ask Representative Mitch Greenlich and Tom Burns to go forward and explain what 2009 is all about.
I've been waiting.
We aren't doing anything until we can ask questions. I think, yeah. I mean, it's not how we got to know.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm Mitch Greenlich, State Representative of House District 33. What I propose to do is to work with two documents you have in front of you. One fat one of about 53 pages. It says Section 1 on the top of the first page. And then you have a document in boxes like this. This document is the bill in its current form, including the amendments the House Committee has agreed to in concept that we've sent down to the Legislative Council for drafting as a single formal amendment. We may either have that one amendment back in front of us, or we might get an A engrossed version of the bill. We'll be talking about that tomorrow, but I'd like to go through that section by section and answer any questions you have or take any discussion from Senator Montes Anderson to handle any discussion from the Senate side or anybody at the table. So I'll work my way through this quickly. It has in it all the substance of the bill, of the 263-page bill plus amendments. So if you want to know what the bill is, right now, this is it. We may also get another 500 pages of conforming amendments, which I'm trying to avoid getting now to confuse the issue, or 300 pages or something, but we'll see. All right, Section 1 establishes the Oregon Health Authority Board, and it talks about consisting of the members. The red line on there is a cross out. We simply took out the reference to ORS 292495. The purpose of the amendments were to allow the board to set its own compensation and expense policies rather than to use the standard, which was something like $30 a day. Section 2 is the original. It talks about the terms of office for the nine people on the board. Nine on the board.
That should be a three. Okay.
Section 3 talks about the governor being able to appoint them as specified in a different section of the act. That's a boilerplate section and allows them to go to work.
Yes, sir.
For overview, this document does four things. It creates the health authority, it creates the board, gives both of them assignments, it expands the Medicaid population, and it deals with taxes, which I think we are not going to deal with tonight. That's being dealt with in a separate process. When we work out the question on taxes, either it will come into this bill or all the tax stuff will come out of this bill, and it'll be in a separate bill. As I've said, that's being decided at a higher pay grade than me or any of the others that are working on it. Section 4 is a new section compared to what the big bill has, and it defines the membership. This was a sort of compromise. We had a membership of the board defined in one way. There were two proposals to replace the way we had it. One was a proposal to use the 329 definition of the board that created the health fund board, and this was many of the folks got together and produced this, which if you want to take a moment and look at it, it defines the board pretty broadly, but one that the people who were worrying about it seem pretty comfortable. And it would be, let's see, a 9-member board, no more than 4 of whom will be earning their living in the healthcare field, and at least one of them will be a provider licensed in Oregon. That provider could be doctor, nurse, could be anything, and there could be more of them subject to the four-person limit. Section 5 has the governor appointing both the chair and the vice chair as a part of the appointment, and talks about meeting at least monthly. You can, if I screw it up, you can step right in. Section 6, in the original version of the bill, if any of you have the original version, if you don't, we'll be happy to get you one. I've got a few hidden in my drawer. It talked about the board having authority to create staff and all that. We decided after discussions to have the authority staffing the board, producing the staff and the other things for the board, which is, in essence, in this case, a part of the authority, but somewhat set aside from that. Seven is boilerplate. Eight is an important new section, and it adds two subcommittees. In the first draft of it, we had a bunch of committees. When we actually put it together, we took those committees out. This puts in two subcommittees of the board. One is a subcommittee to deal with public health benefit purchasers, and that would be like PEB and OEB. Talks about that, plus cities and counties being involved in this, under the assumption that that subcommittee working with the board will create the way to bring the state's purchasing power into being, and perhaps in the exchange, which you'll see is created later. And it talks about who can be on that subcommittee. The subcommittee, they say, reports to the board, and our assumption is when the board has responsibility to design something around public purchasers, this is where that will happen. It also has a healthcare workforce subcommittee, because we all know you can do all this and get people health insurance and maybe even access to care, and there won't be the providers there to take care of them. So the workforce committee is something Representative Dembra was particularly interested in and is working on adding a little substance to this, and we'll have some individual amendments around this, but this highlights that these are two important issues. Now, it also, the board will name other subcommittees as they need it, but these two will be explicitly done in the bill. And Section 9 says what I just said. The board will name whatever technical committees and subcommittees they need. Section 10 is a complete rewrite over the original bill and even, I think, a first draft of it. When we started trying to make sense of the original bill, we found the duties of the board, the composition of the authority, and the definition of what they need to do when they're creating an exchange sort of mixed up. So we tried to get them in a purer form
where 10 is the duties of the board. What do we have? 11?
11 is the duties of the authority.
Yeah, 11 is the makeup of the authority. Is that right?
Duties.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. 11 is about the authority. 18 is about the exchange. And 20 is what creates the authority. And these are a set of duties. Where I've been trying to go in the creation of this bill is to put in place a structure and to avoid as much as possible hanging Christmas tree ornaments on that structure, to try and say basically the controversial elements, although even the structure has controversy around it, but to save issues like should there be an individual mandate, not be an individual mandate, a lot of other things, to let the board, to give the board the responsibility of creating plans, mostly to bring back to us in the 2011 session. So set it up, create it, continue essentially the work of the health fund board in some ways, have some specific assignments, and bring them back to us, any of the key issues, back to us as a for legislative action in the 2011 session.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mitch, excuse me, Representative Greenleck.
Mitch is my preference.
No. Mm-hmm. On page 12, where at the very bottom it says, the board shall implement any portions of the duties not requiring legislative authority to the extent practicable. What does that mean?
This is boilerplate that comes out of, that says if they have the ability to do things by the charter that they've created here, they can do them. If they need legislative authority, then they need to bring it back to us in 11. Okay. For example, they can hold meetings. They can do a variety of things.
I can understand. I guess, and I'm just kind of reading these now, I'm still trying to find explicit language that this creature we're creating can't do whatever they want, or that there's a separation between what they can and cannot do without our approval, and I'm unclear on those divisions.
Let's separate the authority for a moment from the board. The authority is a department, an executive department, that's made up from different components, most of which come from the DHS. So it essentially divides DHS in half and moves the health and healthcare functions to the authority and brings a few other things like FEOP and some things that come from other places that are health related. It can do whatever it can do now. I mean, and that's why it takes 600 pages of conforming amendments to move whatever powers and authority, whatever powers there are now in those functions currently in government over to here, and it can continue to do whatever it does. So the public health piece of it can keep doing public health things, the Medicaid thing can keep doing Medicaid things, FEOP can keep doing FEOP things, and all that power comes from the no new things, just all the old things come as a part of the conforming amendments. We're giving the board some specific things to do, and among those specific things are creating a plan for a health insurance exchange. And we talk about, when we get to 18, the kind of things it should be planning, what the exchange ought to look like, and what it needs to think about as it creates it. That all stuff is all new, and that stuff, I'm sure, needs statutory authority to do. But I think the short answer is, unless we specifically have it here as a new either responsibility or a new authority, the components keep doing what they were doing before. The board does a lot of planning stuff. Unless there's anything specific here that it says it should do.
Okay. Thank you.
And the House members have seen this very carefully. I think the Senate members, I mean, we're going from here to getting it back so we can adopt it. And if there's any discussions, if you've had a chance to read it, then we ought to get back together.
Yeah.
Madam Chair's had a chance to look at the last version. Dr. Bates went over the whole thing a couple days ago.
Okay. But just so I'm clear on this, because right now we're just talking about the board, correct?
In this case, we're just talking about the board. When we talk about the authority, it is only what it can do now.
Okay. So what you're assuming the board needs to have the authority to hold meetings, create committees, and that's the scope of...
Do a particular set of planning assignments we give it.
Right, but they don't have implementation authority.
I believe they don't have any implementation authority unless there are some specific words here that say they do.
Okay.
Other than that, they need to come back with plans for anything significant, like the exchange or any of the, I mean, doing the exchange, getting involved in a variety of things. Well, let's see what the authority will have. A few things that DHS doesn't have, but they're somewhere else in government. So there are things that are moving from someplace into here. We're not creating any new functions for the authority at this moment. And this is a big mouthful here. Tom, do you have any comment on 10?
No.
You need to introduce yourself, I think.
The chair, for the record, Madam Chair, I'm Tom Burns. I'm serving as a self-policy consultant to Representative Greenlick, and I was hoping not to say anything.
Most of the things that we're asking it to do come directly out of the Health Fund Board report. Like, for example, in 10A on 13, 10A on 14, okay. Yeah, 10A on 14, it talks about creating an essential benefit package, which is what comes right out of the Health Fund Board. The language talks about what it ought to look like. This would be the essential benefit package for use in the exchange when the exchange gets up and operating. But and the language is basically, all this language comes right out of the Health Fund Board report.
Representative Greenlake, so the board will decide what type of exchange to have.
Yeah, if you want to skip to section 18. What it says in 18 when we get there is it ought to have three characteristics. It ought to have guaranteed issue, it ought to have community rating, and it ought to have a public option to compete in the exchange. And then it gives a whole list of things it needs to think about in the plan that it's going to create for the exchange. Should there be an individual mandate or not? Should there be? There are a whole set of things it says take into consideration as you're creating a plan. But the plan needs to come back to us for the exchange in the 2011 session. They need to have the plan to us by December 31st of 2010. Want to take a minute to glance at these items before we move on?
There's a problem.
Chair? Question?
Yeah.
Representative Greenlick, in section M here, A, B, C, and D.
What page are you on?
Page 12 yet.
Okay.
The first part, you talk about establishing in 10A, which is a page over what that basic benefit package looks like. But I'm looking at, draw attention to M and then A, a requirement for every resident to have health insurance coverage is one of the things you're going to look at with the exchange. I'm assuming this is essentially looking at the probability or possibility of a mandate for every individual in Oregon to be responsible for getting health care.
Yeah, it's correct. Mentioned again at 18, but it says investigate and report to the assembly there every year the feasibility and advisability of future changes to the health insurance market in Oregon to achieve these things.
Yes. The other part of this follow-up,
yes,
is C, which talks about a premium system program inside the exchange. Is that correct, too?
That's right.
I'm drawing people's attention. You talk about a mandate. You talk about a supplement for lowers and Oregonians inside the exchange. We know previous exchanges in other states have had difficulty with this. And when there was an exchange, but when people got through it, their ability to buy the product was hampered by their income and the cost. So you're dealing with that in these statements.
I don't see A as only the mandate, though. Let me go back and re-answer that question. One of the functions of the health fund board was to create a path to universal access. As you remember, we had that in 329. They didn't create that path to universal access. This, I think, gives the board the continuing responsibility to figure out every year how we can get closer and closer to the universal access model. I would think the individual mandate might be one thing, but there might be other things that they suggest to the legislature to do. But this is to keep that promise alive that somebody ought to be planning on moving us toward universal access that we had in 329.
I'm not disagreeing, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure people are clear that this doesn't make that occur, but it moves the authority and the board in that direction.
Well, it also points out it's not going to happen one time. That this is going to be to look at it year to year or session to session to ask us how we can move closer to an ideal that I don't think anybody thinks we would ever get to.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, I guess I'm still kind of stuck on this, Representative Greenlee, because it seems that in this we're prejudicing the board to say the exchange is the way to go when we haven't even had a test run of it. Wouldn't it make more sense to say if an exchange is a viable option, shouldn't we have a test drive of it parallel to the individual market and see which performs better? And this is prejudicing us towards the exchange here.
No, I don't think so. And specifically,
in the language,
what it's not doing is not saying that all the health insurance activity takes place in the exchange. I think it's a very specific open question that we leave open, that we left open intentionally. So I think it does prejudice us to say there should be an exchange where some things can happen. But it doesn't at all say that that's the only place health insurance happens. And we very specifically took out language that led in that direction. So it does prejudice to the idea. It does move it toward the idea that there will be an exchange where some things will happen, where we can consolidate public purchasing, we can do some other things, we can create 125 plans and things that can only take place in the exchange. But it absolutely does not say that this is the only place health insurance will be sold in the state of Oregon.
Right. And Madam Chair, I'm trying to find reference to other types of health insurance, and it just talks about the exchange, and it says in L, it says, developed by December 31st, 2010, a publicly owned health plan that operates within the exchange.
Go to page 23. In section 18, and look at item C. I mean 4C. We're talking about the exchange here.
Okay, and we'll get to that when we get to it. That's talking about options, but still under the umbrella of the exchange. I guess
options under the plan for the exchange. So the notion, it says when you're planning for the exchange, when developing the duties and responsibilities, consider the following. And that's one of the things to consider when you're making plans for exchange. Should that be the only place health insurance is sold or not?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess if you want to go there on Section 18, number one, it says the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange is created in the Oregon Health Authority. So you're creating it. You've already determined that that's what you're going to do. And then this is driving the board, hopefully, towards those conclusions that you want to have happen for Section 18. And I'm just wondering.
We have a note for the LC that you don't have, and let me read it to you. Which I note to Laura, it says the goal of the section is to create the exchange now, but it cannot do anything until the board finishes developing the duties and responsibilities and basically the legislature approves them. So the notion is to create it now, which does follow what the health fund board suggested, but leave it as an empty vessel until we as a legislature approve the plans for how it operates. But we thought in order to stay true to the health fund board report, and this is an attempt to implement stage one of the health fund board report, we create the exchange and then we give the authority, the board, the responsibility of creating a plan for how that exchange works. It could just as easily not be done. This is a symbolic, item one when we get there, is a symbolic salute to the health fund board that we put in place in Senate Bill 329 from the 2007 session.
Okay.
Senator Bates?
Madam Chair, as I read this, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, 329 and the health fund board spoke on several different areas about an exchange as an option to what's available now, but did not exclude any other options. You know, if you go to some single payer systems as an example, they actually exclude the ability to have private insurance. If you go to Canada, you have one system, and only one system there, and you're not allowed to have any other insurance. This bill does not do anything nearly like that at all. What it says basically is we would like to establish an exchange as an option for purchasers of health insurance. But unless I misread this, I didn't see anything here that said you can't do anything else but this. And I would not be supportive of a bill that did that. I think having a robust market for purchasers to choose from is wise. Now, this is part of that robust market. It gives them another option, and the other option is going through the exchange if they so wish to do, or they get a better product for themselves versus benefits and cost. I think that's what you're driving to.
Well, I'm driving to have the board consider that, make plans for that, and come back to us with their proposal, whatever the proposal is. And conceivably, they'll come back with a proposal that says all health insurance has to go through the exchange, and we'll get the legislature and say, "Woo, wait a minute." But it says you have to ask that question in what you're doing. Basically, I don't know who created the metaphor, but we've been using it lately. We see the exchange as sort of like a shopping mall, and health insurance purchases take place in that mall. There are a bunch of stores. One store, incidentally, we suggest should be a government store, where people, if that's where they want to go shop, they can shop in the government store, but there's a Regent store and an ODS store and a bunch of other stores. What we're trying to do is to set up that shopping center, that mall, without putting anything in the stores now or without defining what the rules are, including the question is, should that be the only mall in town? Or should there be other malls where health insurance can be purchased with other rules? And we've had testimony on both sides of this. Basically, we've had testimony that says, if you want to do these things in a mall, you can have other malls, but they all have to follow the same market rules. My sense now is we're not prepared to debate those kind of things at this time. This is a big enough bite to chew and to try and digest without getting into the details of some really contentious issues that we want somebody to go off and plan and get back to us as a legislature. So the intent is to sidestep any of those questions, make sure those things can't happen until the authority board's had a chance to spend a couple of years working on this, or a year and a half working on this, and gets back to us for some real debate. That's the intent of what we're doing. Okay. Yeah, there is a new Section 10A. We had a lot of discussion about the benefit package. Should they be creating a basic benefit package, a minimum benefit package, or, in the language of the health fund board, an essential benefit package, which has some meaning here. We decided again, after a fair amount of debate in the committee, to go with the language of the health fund board report, the benefits subcommittee of the health fund board report, which talks about an essential benefit package, which is more than I would consider a minimum benefit. It has some characteristics that some of the people on the committee really like being able to use cost sharing in a different way for evidence-based things and for non-evidence-based things. And frankly, I would have been happier with a less complex model for this. But the basic notion is that in the exchange, at least, this is a minimum benefit package. and it does use the prioritized list in a variety of ways. And in that exchange, the assumption is made here that insurers can wrap around that in any way they want. So as long as they're selling this, they can sell this plus any other combination of things they want. That's the concept behind this essential benefit package.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
On 10AD, incentivize patients to actively participate. Are you talking about a wellness program as part of this? And could you just speak to that briefly?
Yeah. That's what I read it to be. This comes out of the Health Fund Board report, and there's a whole report on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically it was to say, a lot of sentiment in the committee to say that if people quit smoking and do other things, there's a way to reward them.
Well, what does it mean to incentivize? You're going to provide
co-payments.
Senator Morissette, I don't know what it means.
Okay. Madam Chair?
In my own personal thing, I know the problem is we have all these skiers and adrenaline freaks who drive up the orthopedic costs, and I'd want to do something to raise their insurance rates. They and the handball folks are very dangerous in my mind. So.
Doesn't sound like incentive.
Madam Chair.
Representative Maurer and then Senator Bates.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Incentivize, I see that as both a positive and a negative reinforcement. There are a number of models that financially reward people for certain behaviors, and they penalize people.
Unreward them for.
Excuse me?
Unreward them for other behaviors.
Anti-reward.
Yeah, that's an incentive is a two-way street.
Well, I understand.
Okay. But so and that's how I read that.
You're talking about to pay part of the premiums, to subsidize, to...
Well, there are lots of models.
It can mean a variety of things. Yeah. I received the PEB notice, for example, that I could join Weight Watchers free, and I would get coupons. And frankly, I was ready anyway, having gained 3 pounds in the first 2 weeks down here. So that triggered me to join Weight Watchers again.
Madam Chair, this is very, very important. I think this is an absolutely essential part of what we're doing.
Follow on to this. What happens to our 30-some-odd, quote, insurance mandates within the exchange? They don't just go off the books. But your essential benefit package,
we haven't talked about this. If we want further information on this one, mm-hmm. we should read the report of the Benefits Subcommittee, which was a pretty well-written report that came up with this conclusion. And I don't think they dealt with the question of mandates. My impression is you start overthinking about mandates, but that's my impression. And, there's certainly room for that to be a discussion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, mm-hmm.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to clear the air on this downhill skiing thing. In 50 years of skiing, I've never broken an important bone in my body.
And 50 years of being obese, I've never had a heart attack either. But
I will add this for the record that I didn't always wear a helmet, and you can judge the results yourself. I'm going to go back to a two-year discussion that occurred prior to 329, came forward in 329, came forward to the Health Fund Board, and results in this sentence here. And that is this. 60% of the health care outcomes we see that are poor outcomes are the result of personal lifestyle, and they are not treatable, basically. This is, in medicine, we think we do a lot to save lives, extend lives, and deal with problems, but 60% of really what happens out there is lifestyle. And this is what this drives to. When we talked to some of the self-insured companies, such as Fred Meyer and others, they had specific programs for this that they knew worked. As an example, for smokers, they would pay for medications. They would give them time off work, paid time off work to go to smoking cessation programs. And they saw their health care costs and absenteeism go down because of those programs. So this really is an important thing. And it's not something we can go into the 23 or 24 things that should be done. But keeping this sentence in there, as Senator Morissette said, is extremely important. Trying to get people to be responsible for this is something that that I think we all should try to achieve. My Republican colleagues have especially been serious about this, and I appreciate that. Over and over again in 329, they said, where is the responsibility for the individual to take care of their health? This goes to that point, and I appreciate members who are sitting here with me tonight who brought that up to us over and over again. There are ways to incent people, and it needs to be done, so I appreciate this language.
Senator Bass, and the same thing is true of well, item C, and we're also talking, our Republican colleagues talk about making sure people have skin in the game and using financial mechanisms for moving in the right direction. This is intended, I think, to do exactly that, to use financial incentives to move people towards not demanding things that are not evidence-based, because they can demand them, but the notion, as I understand this, is they pay some or maybe all of the costs of things that are not evidence-based, and there is little or no cost sharing on things that are. So it's a continuation of that same principle, to have financial incentives for people to behave in a rational way. And some people would argue this could be the most important cost-saving thing we do by something like this, the help guide. I mean, the argument is that as long as people have no skin in the game, and the doctors have no skin in the game, they're going to be covered anyway. Go ahead and order the MRI. Well, in this case, if I demand an MRI that's not viewed as evidence-based for what I'm trying to do, I can have it as long as I'm willing to pay the $3,000 for it. That makes a different calculus. And I believe this may be pushing that way into making... into getting skin in the game in a way that moves in the right direction, not in the wrong direction. So, yes, these are both, I think, nods to a particular perspective on how to reorganize healthcare.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, Representative Greenleg, first off, what you're talking about is not doing a test. I think at some point we need to get into tort reform to make that liable. We hadn't brought that up yet. We had to bring it up. We bring it up at every meeting.
It isn't in here, anywhere in here.
No, I understand that, but we bring up tort reform at every meeting of our committee. So just because
we think we should. I could Representative Maurer to do it in our committee.
Okay. I guess, but
they want to reconsider.
But other than that, I mean, because C talks about preventable or about chronic diseases. I mean, are you suggesting something like, for example, for a diabetic, their testing and medicines and all that is we cover, but if they don't manage their disease, then it's going to cost them something? I mean, is that the sort of thing we're talking about?
I suspect that's what we're talking about with incentives.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That comment that there are a lot of states are experimenting with incentive programs, positive and negative. Companies are experimenting. There's some research that's just come out in the last couple months to support actually negative reinforcement for smoking. I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff.
I get you yet.
Your tax is going to do that, I think.
the point is, we just need to have that door open and not leave that door closed. And let's do the things that work and don't do the things that don't work.
You know, if we could cut out the things that are proven to be non-effective in the healthcare issue, I've seen estimates that we could save up to 25%. Of the healthcare dollar by just doing things we know don't work. I mean, by not doing things we know don't work. This might help that. Okay. 11. The Oregon Health Authority is established, and it has some stuff that's boilerplate, but some stuff that's not. For example, it does provide the single state authority for Medicaid in that agency, which it happens when it moves it over from DHS. It provides, it moves the health insurance rate regulation from DCBS over to the authority, but it doesn't take away DCBS's responsibility for managing the
the rate increase submissions, but it puts that authority in a health context rather than an insurance context where it is in DCBS. We listened to Ms. Streisinger explaining to us why the original thing moved the whole mechanism for health insurance rate review to the authority, and we became convinced we can leave the black box in DCBS that processes these things, and you'll see some language later, but it brings the authority and DCBS together to discuss the question of rate regulation and benefit.
You don't think that that's fragmenting the whole process of separating out what DCBS does with claims, et cetera, and working contracts and all of that, and then rate setting all by itself in another entity?
We had some really good testimony from Dr. Goldberg about how it might be feasible to create this agency without being both more expensive and more complicated. And he suggested there would be a lot of functions, for example, that could stay in both in DCBS and in DHS. Another example of this was the decision to leave the Medicaid enrollment process with family and children that are doing it for food stamps and a bunch of other things, rather than trying to duplicate an eligibility process in the authority. So we took advantage of doing that whenever we can, leaving technical functions which the authority could pay for or could be handled somewhere else, but to bring the decision-making process into the authority so it could be fit into the health plans rather than insurance plans.
Madam Chair,
yes, sir.
Speaking of DCBS, there's a crisis on the horizon. We now put $25 million into subsidizing rural family practitioners in rural Oregon. That's going to go away. If you're going to take over some of these functions, I mean, I think we have to plan something in this program to continue doing what we're doing to keep doctors in rural Oregon. I've had doctors tell me they will leave the state if that subsidy goes away. That's to subsidize our medical malpractice. Now, my solution to that was to put all the doctors who deal with Medicare, Medicaid patients under the state cap that OHSU is under. You know, that would give them significant relief. That didn't fly before the committee that I took it to, but they're going to be looking
at the wrong committee.
I took it to the wrong committee. Should have kept it in my committee. Okay, what I'm saying is there are some other issues that we haven't even talked about. We didn't talk about them in 329 that we're going to have to consider, and that is whether or not we are indeed going to continue that $25 million biennium subsidy of these particular physicians. Now, Doc Bates worked on that bill, Ms. Streisinger worked on that bill, and we're going to have to talk about it again. So,
well, my assumption is if we pass the bill, then this is the place it can be managed. I mean, and
well, my assumption is you're going to have to figure out how to do it.
Thank you, sir.
Put it in your plan.
Figure out how to do it, just not in this bill. Because I agree with you. I think it absolutely needs to be done. I don't think any of us disagree with that.
Senator Bates?
Just to follow on Senator Morissette's statement, but I'm going to ask another question here, too. The program he's talking about was one that was put together 6 years ago. It stabilized rural physicians. We stopped losing rural physicians, started actually recruiting some because we pay part of their insurance malpractice premium for them on a continuing basis each year. It's actually been a very inexpensive program, less than we expected. It's actually stretched out 2 years longer than we thought it would, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. But that funding will run out in 2 years. We'll have to deal with that the next plan or at the end of this one. This is the perfect place to deal with that as part of the discussion for the authority. authority. It's kind of decisions the authority could and should make. They would have some control and some funds for that, too. It's a good process. It's a good way to deal with it. So I think it's the place you should go, and I agree with that. But I want to ask a question about approval of rates, because it started a significant discussion when I first saw this. I was uncertain if you were talking initially about approval of rates for insurers, and obviously you were. One of the great difficulties in Oregon and across the country is the disparity in pay between primary and preventative care and specialty care. We have moved in this country, in this state, to specialty care. That's one of the key drivers of high cost of health care in the United States. 329, the Health Fund Board recognized that. And we wanted to see a movement to some parity of pay between primary care and specialty care. Without doing that, we'll continue to go into a very high-tech industry as far as healthcare is concerned, often applying high-tech in areas where there is no significant improvement in outcomes, but a significant increase in costs.
When we get to this pack, you'll see some amendments proposing exactly that.
And I want to let you know that we are preparing an amendment to talk about RVUs, real value units, not the conversion factor, but the relative values that normally are followed by the commercial market as a result of what's done in Medicare. And we think it's time for the authority to have the ability to say we're breaking that bond and we're going to do something different outside of Medicare than what's done inside Medicare. And I just wanted to prepare you for that probability.
I think you'll see several amendments that move in that direction in the PAC. We already have that. If we have time, we'll talk about that. Yeah, I agree with you. And the other notion is that you'll find that piece in here that has $100 million for reimbursement. And the notion is that half or a little more of that might be needed to deal with the hospital tax. But the other is for physician and other reimbursement. My assumption is it would be oriented toward primary care.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. 12 is boilerplate. That there's a director. But incidentally, the model we took for the agency, for the authority and its board, is pretty much the model that ODOT and the Transportation Commission has. There are other models. DEQ's model, the board runs the agency. In the ODOT model, the governor runs the agency, and the commission has its own functions, and that was the model that we took in this one.
Should have found an agency somebody likes.
I know, but
couldn't
give
find
me,
one.
Give me one. You like DEQ better?
Yeah. Let's.
All right, let me put it this way. We decided not to use DEQ.
Okay.
That's the point. 15, all this boilerplate. You know that the health officer of the state has a gun and a badge? We didn't put that in here, but that's...
You say that, but no one's been able to prove it.
We're going to call them in, and we're going to find out. At one time, they did. Section 17.
Yes. Representative Kim.
I asked him personally. He said he does, and it's in a safe.
There you go.
No, this gun and badge actually exists.
Representative Maurer?
No, that's useful.
And I hope he never has to use it because it was designed to enforce quarantine. That's something we don't want to see happening again. Section 17 puts in something called the Quality Care Institute, which comes out of something in the Health Fund Board. Yeah, the original language was it should be used by all purchasers. We struck that language out, and it is to develop healthcare standards that can be used by purchasers in the exchange or anywhere else. And it's a part of the quality component of this thing. All right, 18 is the exchange. That's page 23 on. This was, as revised earlier in the week, it has two parts. It has three which says in developing the plans, they should take into account all of these things, A through H. And when developing those plans for the duties and responsibilities, it may consider the following issues. So it's you have to think about these things, and you can think about those other things as you create the report.
Oh. Representative Garrett.
Hey, Mitch, I just noticed that subsections 3 and 4, one refers to the board taking into account, the other refers to the authority. Was that intentional?
No, that's not intentional.
Okay.
We need to straighten that out. Well, except the authority creates it, right? But the board does the design. So, yeah, it should say the board.
Thank Where you, are you on this?
He's at the end of the line 4 on page 23. At the end of the line that is 4, when developing the duties and responsibilities of the exchange, it says the authority may consider. But up under 3, it says the board shall take into account. That needs to be board in both cases.
Okay.
You got that?
Yeah.
There's also a couple of words missing. The H under 3H, it says the principle of little or no cost to individuals. Senator Bates pointed out that is supposed to mean the principle of little or no cost to low-income individuals. I'm going to probably still have to pay based just on my legislative salary alone.
I got pretty excited about that.
That's a good one.
Powerball.
Wow. I just hit the jackpot.
We point out to Lori on the next page, VLC, that the goal of this section is to create the exchange now, but it cannot do anything until the board finishes developing the duties, responsibilities, etc., and we mean to say the legislature approves them. So we wanted to make sure that language was clear, whatever she had to do to make it clear. That the intention is we vet whatever plans there are.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
Will Lori be finished working on your amendments pretty soon so she can get to our amendments?
Don't let her blame. No. She's a hard-working person, and she'll get to yours. As soon as you can.
Yeah.
I refuse to take the rap for that one.
Well, you should.
I have lots of things I'm guilty of. Lots of things I'm guilty of, but I don't think that's one of them. Okay.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I still think, nothing can be decided. You're going to add the language that the legislature has to approve. But I still think that you look at this section and what the work described in this section is, it's prejudicing the decision of the legislature in favor of the exchange.
Favor of having an exchange.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In favor of having an exchange. Not in favor of the exchange. Not in favor of an exchange of any characteristics. Not in favor of the exchange being the only place health insurance is sold. But it is prejudicing it in favor, out of the Health Fund Board report, of creating an exchange. Guilty.
Okay.
What the rules are, what happens in it, how it works, that'll all be decided by the 2011 legislature.
Which is an exciting thought to think about, but I'm just wondering. I'm just
Take
wondering.
Care of yourself, so you're back here to help.
Well, I know I'll be here, but I guess I'm wondering where does anything that's an alternative to the exchange have an opportunity to weigh in the process?
Well, let me just go back a step. I mean, we put in place the Health Fund Board by a several-year process, including creating 329. And in a year-long planning process, that's one of the main recommendations that the board came up with. What House Bill 2009 tries to do is put in place on a rational basis the things that we need to do to implement the health fund board report. And that report very clearly proposes an exchange. It even has some ideas about how it ought to be. All we're doing, we are, I think it does honor that process by prejudicing things toward the fact that there shall be an exchange. It doesn't prejudice anything about what that exchange looks like or how it works.
Okay. However, I would point out that the health fund board tasked the exchange committee to come up with an exchange, not to come up with an exchange and other alternatives. They were tasked to come up with an exchange. So the process from the very beginning was prejudiced in one direction.
I accept that.
It's
prejudice to come up with an exchange.
Representative Cook.
Now, it seems to me we need to manage what that exchange looks like.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with the good representative that, you know, we're trying to honor the work of many folks in the Health Fund Board Report. But I guess I have a, and so I'm okay with that in that regard. But my question to the good senator is, you're worried that it's prejudicing, it has prejudiced is in this direction, and so when you're saying it leaves out other options, what other options are you talking about that you want to see somehow recognized or justified? I guess I'm not sure what you're talking about when you say that.
Well, this is anecdotal, okay? And talking to some members of that exchange committee, were not, and some members of that committee would have preferred to suggest, for example, that if this exchange is a good thing, that we should run it side by side with individual market and check performance to see which performed better.
Yeah,
and they were not given the opportunity to suggest that.
Well, but this doesn't prejudice that. That could
be their plan. Let's put it that way. It doesn't preclude it.
Okay, Representative Bruin and then Senator Bates.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point out that the last work session that we had on that as part of the responsibilities of the exchange to consider was maximizing participation of private insurers, and that has been left off. I just want to make sure for the record that that's still a one of our motivations.
Wait, you want to comment?
Say that again, Representative.
Yeah. One of the points that we brought up the last meeting we had on this was part of the duties and responsibilities of the exchange was to consider efforts to maximize participation of private insurers within the exchange.
Madam Chair,
as opposed to minimizing.
Madam Chair, Representative Bruin, I think we actually went you one better. If you look at 3G, the exchange shall take into account all the following: the role of insurance producers. I am told that that term insurance producers is the term for the private insurance, for the insurance market, for brokers,
well,
for sales agents.
There's a different emphasis between the role and maximizing, and I guess the point I'm trying to say is we're making a conscious, at least that I was advocating, making a conscious and explicit advocacy for maximizing private insurance within the exchange.
As opposed to maximizing public-oriented insurance.
Oh, and not to exclude, but I mean, we've had conversations, and of course there's not from you, Mr. Chair, but there's been conversations and scuttle in sort of the larger world that says, well, this is just a glide path to a single payer system, and I want to explicitly.
Where did that from me?
I did not hear from that.
No,
but I wanted to, and so I want to refute that explicitly by just making that point overt.
Yeah, well, I think we do need to figure out how to do that if we can. There's no question what I believe is the right answer, and there are a lot of people who don't believe as I believe, and I believe that we are going to have a competitive market, and we want a competitive market. We just want to make sure that there's a public entity involved in that and they all follow the same rules.
I just want to make sure we say it as part of the guiding principles.
Let's take that into consideration.
Okay, Senator Bates.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think what Senator Cruz is trying to get to is something that came out of 329, which I actually agree with him on. 329 talks very explicitly about directing the health fund board to do certain things, one of which was to establish an exchange. one of which was to attempt to establish a public-private partnership such as SAFE is, but not to limit anything else. It was very clear that we wanted to maintain the present insurance packages that were products that were available to people and not limit future private products might come along too. We want as much competition here as we could have. I think what may be giving you difficulty, it doesn't really spell that out here. It seems to say, look at the exchange, look at the exchange, look at the exchange, and doesn't really, it stays sort of silent on the rest of it. I would assume, I probably shouldn't assume this, you'd feel much more comfortable, and I actually would be more comfortable with you, if there was language here saying this does not limit our present products, nor does it make it difficult to bring new products in for future competition also. Language of that sort would probably, I think, get you where I think you want to go.
Well, we actually talk, if you look at the bottom of four, into some of exactly the things. Talk about health savings plans, talk about high deductible plans. I mean, it really does. I don't know if you can read this as any way of not moving toward looking at the question of how do you have new products.
Well, Madam Chair, follow up.
Yes.
The problem, I think, with the language, and I agree with the language, is that it says it's basically within the exchange because of the four, then A, B, C, D, and F, are talking about the responsibilities of the exchange, and these are all products we'd like to see in the exchange and possibly outside the exchange to another insurance product. So I think it's just making clear what the intent is here.
Well, B talks about an individual mandate, not in the exchange, not necessarily. C talks about, asks the question, should it be the exclusive market? I mean, I suppose there are other ways to, I mean, this seems to be as wide open as it can possibly be. Because we're giving them the plan. I think we're going to argue this out in the 2011 session, which is much rather where I'd prefer to argue it out.
But to follow up on Senator Bates, Representative, you know, you pointed out B and C, but that's all under 4, which is the exchange.
That's all under 4, which are the plans for the exchange, which is what Senator Bates suggested it ought to be.
No, I suggested it should not. It should be there and outside the exchange,
yeah.
both within and without. And it could be construed, as I see it, it could be construed. This is all language. What's happening inside the exchange? Remember, getting into semantics here, but sometimes semantics are important.
Words matter, don't they?
Well, sometimes. Not at my house when I'm being talked to, but sometimes they do matter.
Well, words do matter, and part of the issue is the pathway that we've been trying to work between our advocates who are all the way to a single-payer system, as somebody said, to advocates who are in favor of no regulation of anything at all. And what we're trying to do with 2009, since we need to figure out how to get the votes for it, is to steer a path that avoids the debates that don't need to happen now, but puts in place a structure where the planning can take place and where we have the opportunity to debate it again in the next legislative session. So it's, I mean, that's what the attempt is to steer that path into a way that moves us firmly to the next step, but not any further than that. And we're getting a lot of static from both the right and the left. For example, you'll see a proposed amendment that says, don't do any of this stuff, everything's fine. Give the health fund board another 2 years to give you another plan, and we'll worry about it then. Well, I mean, that's one side. And the other side is, this isn't specific enough to ensure we get what we believe the healthcare system should go. So it's a careful picking our way along that path.
I just have to say this about the publicly owned health plan. I don't see how you can create a scenario where the publicly owned health plan doesn't have a significant advantage when the people on its side are setting the rules, setting the rates, and control. I mean, they control the pieces of the game board and can set them up however they want. And so I don't see how that doesn't essentially put you on to a...
If you want an example, look at SAFE and the workman's compensation market. It's exactly that.
Perfect example.
And it's working pretty effectively.
Perfect example.
Well,
and they're a public, or at least a semi-public, and I assume that's the kind of thing we'd be talking about, competing for workman's compensation business in the market. They're very successful at it. You're right, but I don't think it's because the rules are stacked in their favor.
Senator Walker would disagree with that statement.
I know she would.
No, no, on the floor today. On the floor, she said everything's nice.
No, she said okay.
But that is an example, and I don't think the cards were stacked in SAFE's favor. And they're, I mean, it seems to me to be a perfectly
SAFE's
valid model.
A success because it is extremely good at rationing care is ultimately how it's been successful.
It's also reduced the cost of business very dramatically in this state.
Right, because the business owners pay for it. It's not the employees, it's business
owners. But you, I mean, you asked for an example, there's an example. Okay, keep going.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Harker. It's well hidden.
I thought I said
I don't understand
Harker.
Why you
Did
have
I
such a
Harker?
Problem with this. Because I can think of several examples.
There we go.
He's right. Where the government at the state or the federal level sets the criteria of what should happen, and small businesses of all sizes, do a better job providing what is expected, in fact required.
I mean like banking?
And I would say
no.
I would cite two examples. Medicare and Medicaid. And you know, we can debate that, but those are the two programs.
Yeah.
And they're successful,
and
they're successful because they underpay the providers.
But they're not competing with anybody.
Well, I'm
competition takes place inside those things, but they're not competing with anybody.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that's happened with this bill, which I think is fun, is we really triggered the opportunity to have a bunch of great discussion groups. And maybe in the interim we can get back to a healthcare discussion committee because there's lots of fun in this one. Not so much fun creating.
Yeah, Representative Morissette, and then let's get going.
I won't throw out my grenade. By saying insurance companies don't provide health care.
Yeah.
That's my grenade.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. No, they
well,
don't
some
provide
of them
healthcare.
Do. Kaiser Permanente does.
Well, sometimes even stand in the way of health care with not covering important issues.
Put the pin back in it and go
I'll
on.
Put
the pin back in the bottle.
Okay, Section 19, are we ready for?
Yeah, this is a piece, this is, assuming we get a provider tax, this is the place the money gets stuffed before we spend it. It's the way Medicaid works right now with the provider tax. This comes from the current provider tax. You'll find other things that come from the current provider tax too. 20 is the all the functions that move from B to A, C to A, D to A, and other places to A. It's my, as Representative Maurer has chided me for, it's my small government approach. I think DHS is, I'll say on the record, too big to manage and too complex to manage, and I think if we create a health agency and a social welfare agency, we have a much better chance of efficient government. And basically, that's what this does. Dr. Goldberg suggested that this could work. He didn't testify for or against it because he works for the governor, but he said it is possible to do this efficiently if he has 2 years to do it. And we're compromising for a year and a half.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Representative, you and I have talked about that restructure for many years now. Is this just doing it, or is this developing an implementation plan?
It doesn't. It says have it ready for the 2011 budget.
But it doesn't It just does it. This does it right here. We don't have to approve anything
this
beyond
this.
This
does it right here. We don't have to approve anything else.
So, where's public health? Where's communicable disease?
Public health comes with it.
Communicable disease?
Communicable disease is part of public health.
Emergency management?
Public health.
The health component.
Every
the,
health.
The public health division moves.
Into this.
Into this. Completely. Including, I assume, the public health advisory board and the other pieces that go with that. But so
maternal child health.
The only thing that's health or health care related that doesn't move is the long-term care components of seniors and disabled. Long-term care, we've made a decision right now to leave that where it is. But everything else, the Medicaid components of it, the acute care components of it, that's Medicaid too. That's a little problem. But everything else in DHS that's health or health care related moves. Plus the Office of Private Health Partnerships, including everything, including the Office of Health Policy and Research. But FEHP moves. The PEB and OWEB have a board that reports to DAS, and the board runs it, and they simply move, and that line simply goes to the health authority. So that comes out of DAS, but it doesn't change anything in the conditions of PEB and OWEB. It just moves the reporting line from DAS. Is there anything else?
So you're leaving long-term care outside, but senior and disabled services are moving
outside.
Inside?
No.
SDSD stays.
Senior and disabled, family, and children stay where they are. Is there another?
Commission children. Commission children, family stay where they are.
Yeah, those things all stay where they are, including long-term care, which is Medicaid funded, but we're leaving that there with seniors and disabled rather than moving it. Although the Medicaid component, like for the dual eligibles and that thing, that stuff would move with OMAP.
So are we kind of bifurcating mental health or?
Mental health is coming. All comes. Mental health and substance abuse.
Yep. There's Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Dembro.
You know, I think in Section 20 and 1A, we made some changes that clarify that, you know, if you look at the second sentence of A, that the policies for non-medical services for those individuals in long-term care, home and community-based care, residential facility care for seniors, et cetera, shall remain with the Department of Human Services. So that suggests that the medical aspects of those programs will be under the authority.
Yes.
And so I think that's really the intent. And to my mind, that makes a lot of sense.
We're going to finally get it.
I'm going to think about this one.
I know where you live. Heard it from you.
I know.
In 2003.
That's right.
Okay. 20A is the FEHP, so. 21 is boilerplate. It says they have to move the stuff along. 23 is it's all boilerplate. All the way to the 25. Yeah. 25 is the Maurer Amendment. The purpose of 25 is to provide a safe harbor for discussions so that the agency can bring health insurers in, particularly under the development of the exchange, and get them to all get in the same room to talk about what they're doing. That would, by its nature, be a antitrust, an activity in violation of antitrust, unless we create a safe harbor. This language about conspiracy and other things, the illegal monopoly and all that stuff, is that you have to find it has three characteristics. You have to name the problem, you have to supervise the discussions with a state person, and I don't remember what the third is. You remember?
No.
No, I don't remember.
Show no harm to the public, I think, isn't it?
I think it's show no harm to the public.
Yeah, it has to have a public purpose.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So the public purpose here is creating a rational market, and we have to find language that represents Maurer. Hair doesn't get on fire over, but that does those three things. And you'll love this. We're operating on guidance from a memo from Jim Gardner, left over from when he was a Supreme Court clerk, on how you create this. Very erudite memo. We'll get it right. Okay.
You just say something like, it looks like Major League Baseball.
It would have a salary cap if it did that, right? Something like that. Okay. 50 is moving OPDP in.
OPDP.
Oregon Prescription Drug Program. Moving it along. 124 is about outreach. Now we get into the expansion question. The third part of it, expanding Medicaid, this gives them the ability to market. 125 talks about, again, some more of the marketing. It moves eligibility, I think this is where it is, Kotex, is that right? Moves eligibility to 12 months. Oh, that's the next one, huh? Okay. Rules, yeah. No, it's 125A is the 12 months. Oh, these are provisions in the bills we have in front of us, is that right? Yeah, okay. That amends those bills into this. It's about pregnant women.
Where are you?
I'm on page 40. I think this is the and the presumptive eligibility for pregnant women and the moving from 185 to 200. And 127 tells the authority to immediately apply for whatever approval you need to do this stuff. 128 marks the fact that we expect to use a chunk of the money. The extent to which we look at the governor's plan.
Can we go back to 127? And you chose at or below the 200 percentile, including medical assistance for children and family with at 200%. And why?
Oh, this is the one that gives it authority. We have a bill in front of us called Child Connect, called something like that, and it's intended to have for kids the Medicaid program to 200%, a FEOP-like program from 200% to 300%, and for families over 300%, the ability to buy at their own expense the same kind of benefit package like the FEOP benefit package.
What was in the children's health plan that we had in 2007?
Yeah, right. So basically.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't call it Healthy Kids anymore, though. I call it Kids Connect.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Senator Cruz and then Representative Kotek.
I question why we would raise the federal poverty level for kids to get them into Medicaid rather than
Medicaid or SCHIP.
Well, the point is, if they're Medicaid eligible, they can't go into CHIP. But
no, but this is for the ones under 200%. You have to be under 200% for SCHIP, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess my question is, why would we increase the eligibility for Medicaid when the SCHIP is a better rate?
No, it would be for whichever of those makes sense. But as I understood what the health fund board proposed, was that we maximize enrollment under our current waiver. And our current waiver has a little piece in it that it says you can have 200% if you apply for it. I mean, if you have the money for it. It was in our last waiver package. And 100% for kids, and I think pregnant women also, our current waiver allows us to go to 200. So it's just implementing whatever we can, and would obviously be the best way you could do it. It would, under the new SCHIP, it would clearly be maximizing SCHIP because it's a 3-to-1 match.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, so
they'll figure that one out.
Okay. Senator Bates.
Senator Chair.
I said Representative Kotek and then
first.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry.
Representative Kotek
was
first.
There's only two women. Women.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look at Marge here. Representative Greenlake, Section 127. And is your intention to insert a revised version of House Bill 2117 into that section? Or are you, 2117 is the kids' coverage piece, and we're working on the details of that. And
126. It's the same dilemma that we expressed in our hearing. We need to ask the question whether there's enough in here to allow the authority to do exactly what's in that bill, or whether we want to add another 19 pages of details to this bill. I'm a little reluctant to do that if we have the ability to do it with the language we have. So it's a decision we'll make when we get the whole things back. But my preference would be, if we have all the authority here that we need to do it here. I talked to Dr. Goldberg about it, and Dr. Goldberg said the main advantage of amending 2119, is that the number?
2117.
2117 into it is it gives them some guidance in the rulemaking process. And I'm not sure that's a strong enough argument to hang 19 pages of detail into this bill, which is, Lord knows, detailed enough. But that's a decision yet up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenlake, I'm going back to Section 127, too, because I probably misread this before, and I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. One of the things that 329 asked for, and I thought the Health Board asked for, was try to make less cumbersome and simpler what it takes to qualify for Medicaid. We have families at 185% and families that, if your kids are a certain age, it's a different level. And the way I read this originally probably is a misprint, but on line 3 it says the provision of medical assistance for children and with family income. I read that originally as the provision of medical assistance for children and families with incomes at or below 200%, which would have cleaned all that up. Is that what you meant to do?
Yeah.
So the width should be moved over to be family and incomes?
Wait a minute. Say again.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're trying to say is the provision of medical assistance for children and families with incomes at or below 200%. That cleans all those categories up.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Sheehan said yes, so I think that's what you meant to say.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Families under 200%.
Well, we have some groups at 185%. Our waivers go up to 185. Kids are at 200. Depending on the age of the child or your children, you can be at different percentages. It's a very confused system. And one of the things we wanted to do was, in the categorical, ask for a waiver.
All kids who live in families with incomes under 200% will be eligible. That's the intention. Not necessarily the families. I think that's a different issue.
I would actually want both, right. Because if you don't insure the parents, you don't get the kids.
So the "and" should be removed. That's all.
No. Madam Chair, Senator Bates, and Representative Dembro, it's a policy issue. Right now, we can go to 185. We need to show to the CMS that we have money to go to 200 for both kids and families. That's what the first sentence is talking about, kids and families with incomes at or below 200. For those people who are over 200, between 200 and 300, we need to go to CMS to get...
Wait a minute. Are we saying right now under the waiver, if a family comes in with income under 200, under 185% of the current waiver, that whole family becomes Medicaid eligible?
Yeah.
Not in Medicaid.
Not Medicaid, but in FEOP.
It's FEOP.
It's a mixed
in. Oh, in yeah. FEOP, there's no question that that's the case. But what we want to make sure is kids can get into Medicaid or SCHIP if they live in families under 200%. That's the current waiver or current waiver expansion.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
But the reality is, if we don't get the parents insured, we don't get the kids. We have open slots right now in OHP Plus because we haven't got the parents insured. So I'm hoping what you're saying. I'm not saying what you're saying. I'm hoping what you're saying is you get both, and so you get those kids insured.
Let me make sure exactly what I'm saying. I will tell you exactly what I'm saying. This is to put kids and families and everybody else in Medicaid FEOP under our current waiver provisions.
Right.
It's not intended, except the 185 to 200, which we've been assured we can get.
Right.
It is not intended to change the circumstances of a family under 200%. It's whatever can be done now. Not, this does not require, this is not intended to trigger a new waiver application. It's intended to do whatever they can under the current waiver we have. And whatever that is, that's what this is intended to do. With the slight exception, at the last time we asked for a waiver, we asked for the kids to be up to 200%. They came back and said, you only have money for 185. We'll hold it in abeyance, and if you send us a letter, we'll say it's okay to do 200. But I'm not sure how to answer your question.
Madam Chair, I understand what he's saying. Thank you. You're very clear to me now. And it's a policy decision.
Yeah.
And that's your decision has been clear to me what you want in this bill. I'd like to look at that as a possible amendment, cost it, and see where we're at. But I understand what you're saying, and I accept it.
And this is the proposal from the Health Fund Board. Remember, this is intended to do what the Health Fund Board said step one should be. And step one of the Health Fund Board report was to maximize the enrollment under our current waiver.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I could be wrong, but I also thought our existing waiver approval is children and pregnant women.
I'm sorry.
Up to 200%. Just FYI.
That's why they're both in here.
But the other thing is, I just want to press the good senator a little bit. What you're saying is a policy option potentially that we will cover adults with children and children at a higher income level than we would childless adults. Just checking.
Well, we have lots of vehicles to do that. I certainly don't object to that as a policy. I think it's a great policy.
Can you separate that?
Good.
Adults and adults?
Can you ask so that we hear what you're asking?
Remember, when we first asked for waivers of Medicaid, for the first aid to get them, there were never any such thing as a waiver of Medicaid. What we're asking here for is a waiver that meets reality. Because the reality is, we've got slots available for kids, but if you don't get the parents involved in the program, you don't get the kids.
Right.
I agree.
And so as a reality check, that's where we'd like to go. I like to cost that, think about it, but I understand clearly what you're saying. You want to work under our present waivers as much as possible. Asking for a waiver from 200 to 300% is the only thing, only waiver difference you're asking. I understand.
Yeah, and we have lots of vehicles. I'll be happy to.
Yes.
I mean, I think
the complexity of this is one of the real drawbacks to the system, and we're trying to clean that up as much as we can and trying to make it as a practical program as you can. It's sort of an oxymoron, but I understand what you're saying, Representative Greenlick, and I appreciate it.
I just
wanted
to make sure what I think
I think you're very clear. You're very clear to me, so I understand.
Okay. The rest is about the tax. All I can say to you is there's a separate process where we're trying to work out what the tax ought to be. We'll figure it out when we figure it out, which shouldn't
that's
be
which section?
Too long. And everything else.
Everything else.
Everything after page 44.
Okay. Can I get a clarification from Senator Bates? We're a work session.
I doubt it.
We're in a work session?
we are not.
Oh, we're
they are.
Make heavy words there for a minute.
We're just here. I'm trying to understand when you're talking about adults. Can you separate out adults with children from adults as far as Medicaid's concerned?
Yeah, that's why we have a OHP standard. There are categoricals.
No, I mean, there's categoricals, but I'm not sure that's a category, is it?
No, this is not a categorical. That's why you need a waiver for it. Okay, this is not part of the categorical.
Well, except those people fit into FEOP right now, right?
But
we're between 200.
But we're talking
between 100.
Your question, and this is how complicated it gets, and I may be wrong, but I think I got this right. There are categoricals involved in this, but the children may be in the categoricals, the parents aren't.
That's the issue.
And
how you could make them a categorical from other adults in the same...
One of the questions raised in 329 was, let's get rid of the categoricals. Yeah. Not having the deserving and undeserving poor, they're all deserving poor, make it match reality.
But not in the first step.
That's your policy.
Their report. No, I'm saying their report said the first step, do this.
And the health fund board may have said that, 329 didn't. I'm not completely bound by either one
right.
of them.
Okay. All right, let me just talk a few minutes about what we have left about this report, which includes a listing. We have the actual documents, but it includes a listing of 65 proposals for amendments. Let me put it into three categories right now. Those things that we have already done, or at least done as far as I think we need to with this set of amendments. And they're all the things that in the first column say done, plus, what's that? Those other numbers.
36 and 38.
Plus 36 and 38. If you would correct your note, we believe those things are done. Plus everything else it says is done.
Good.
And there are 28 of the 65 that we think are already taken care of, at least to some level. And we're going to start working through these others as the next set of amendments. But let me also say, in the light of my desire to keep this in a stripped-down version and to prevent it from becoming a Christmas tree with a lot of ornaments on it, there are also some of these that on an a priori basis I think we probably will not consider. And those are toward the back. Let me tell you the ones that I've made a preliminary assumption we will not consider in this round, although we might consider in a separate bill. And whoever wants to can come screaming to me about it. That will be 55, 56, 57, 61, 62, 63, 64, and 65. Now, some of these are things that should be in the benefit package. We've decided to let the board figure it out in terms of the essential benefit package. And for example, should acupuncture be a covered benefit? Maybe it should, maybe it shouldn't, but that ought to be considered not in this bill. So I'm assuming the question of should there have dental coverage. My belief is, of course, it should have dental coverage. I don't think you should be dividing up the body, but I don't think this is the vehicle for doing that. There are some tax proposals, which I think we're handling in a separate basis. In fact, we'll probably be looking at tax issues fairly soon. So the others that aren't either marked done or no will be considering in some systematic way over the next set of sessions.
What does cost mean?
Cost contained.
One of the criticisms we've had is the bill in its current form does not have enough cost containment elements in it. So we'll be
cost is not done, but that's the category. If it doesn't say done,
whatever it is
the category you're putting it in. Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as far as for discussion,
we'll be considering
for discussion. Yeah. Okay.
And we'll consider that one at a time or in some systematic way.
we could talk about some of those if you would like to, if you'd like to glance over it. But I think what will happen is now we'll spend the House Committee getting work on these. We've got a bunch of things, and we could get back together in a joint committee. That means, in fact, we have a day for a night meeting on April 14th, if we'd like to use that. We are going to be here in a joint committee on Monday night, but if by April 14th we would have all these, I think, pretty well worked through. You're also working on a set of bills.
We will give you preliminary. We'll take 15 minutes on Monday night to go over Senate Bill 451, which is the POLTS, 452, which is the electronic records, and 457, which is the workforce database. We only will take 15 minutes, and if we cannot get through it, we plan to work session them, because we have already heard them. They're not as contentious as the other bills, and we feel we can move them. If there's a lot of discussion, we will carry them over to our next meeting. So we don't plan to take more than 15 minutes. But we thought that your committee would at least like to know what we're passing down to Ways and Means, so to speak, the beginning. And we call them the cost containment bills.
And our assumption is we'll amend those into this package, so we'll have the ability to pay for it. And I mean, I think they're going to have trouble in the standalone Ways and Means, but if we have them in this package with the taxes that goes with it, then we'll be able to.
Well, 452 and 457. 457, the workforce. There are grants through the federal government has, I think, $750 million for that. That we could apply for. 452 would be eligible for monies, federal stimulus money.
Would your assumption be that then you want?
No, but you can work them in if you want.
It'd be fine to run them separately too.
452. Yes,
Chris. We thought that these were important enough issues that we wanted to keep them separate and distinct. And
fine. That's great. However you want to handle it.
Madam Chair, I think as Representative Kotek and I will be seeing those bills in our committee in Ways and Means that come through. They are not going there to die.
Right.
These bills have a cost-benefit ratio, some of them of 100 to 1, maybe higher than 100 to 1. These bills will not die. Whether it's better to amend them in 2009 or not, we'll make a decision
later
on.
We'll take your instructions.
We'll work with you on it. We'll work with
you.
Yep.
We do want to put some more cost containment stuff in here.
Two of the bills have significant cost containments in it, and we can talk about those in committee.
Not necessarily does. Mm-hmm. The federal government.
Overall health care system.
Thank you so much. This really helps the Senate, because I hate it when one chamber comes up with a bill that's extremely, it is controversial, and yet it can be definitely some really major changes, and when our chamber can't even discuss it. And I must say, I'm still talking with the President regarding, after it gets through Ways and Means, would love to have it be referred to our committee for a discussion, but we don't know.
That's
beyond what we
also above our pay scale.
Exactly.
Not a lot above, but somewhat above.
I consider two above.
That's true.
We have a majority leader and a...
Well, I know, but their pay isn't that much more than ours.
That's a good point.
Senator Bates.
And incidentally, if you want to hold the 14th, if it's usable, we are scheduling a night meeting on the 14th, and if that...
Let's consider that.
...looks useful, then we could have that as another joint session.
I'll talk to my committee about it. In private.
Oregon open meeting law just went out the window.
One at a time, Alan. It'll be okay.
Madam Chair,
yes,
I've made notes we went through. I had a chance to see these last night. I think you've done a great job, and I appreciate the hard work of the House on this bill. And I have four or five issues that we could probably talk about that are minor ones, but there was one major issue I really think needs to be discussed just at least very, very quickly. It was not in 329, and it was not in the Oregon Health Fund Board. They're trying to deal with Oregon Health Fund Board recommendations primarily here, but the goal of the Oregon Health Fund Board was to improve call quality and bring down costs. That is the goal of this board. And the one thing we don't see here, or any discussion of, but I think something that the authority could at least start the discussion on, quite frankly, is defensive medicine. Defensive medicine is 15% to 20% of the health care costs in this state and across the country. When I say defensive medicine, I'm talking about things that physicians do to protect themselves against tort, which really have little or marginal value in the care of the patient. And what is being constructed here, I think, is a wonderful place to start that discussion. Not that anything would be done, but to start the discussion. And we might want to consider an amendment to the bill saying start the discussion, but no more than that. Just a forum for that discussion to take place in. It seems to me to be the natural place for it. And I don't want to put a poison pill in this and lose votes. Don't get me wrong. This is really an honest thought to start the discussion here that they can bring forward the next 2 or 3 years.
Excellent.
Yeah, Madam Chair, even those who said we're not going to do tort reform this session have been willing to have the discussion, so I don't think that's a poison pill in and of itself.
I don't want to be concerned with that.
There are other poison pills, but I don't think
that's one. Senator Cruz, does that guarantee a vote? If we
No, I said there are other poison pills. That wasn't one.
I think a statement under the duties of the board.
I think that would be a wise
planning.
Place. Yes.
Will you propose something?
I will propose that, but it will be nothing specific. It will just be, this is the place to start that discussion.
It's going to create a mall.
I want you to...
Down the end of
the mall is a little black room.
All right. Is there any further discussion? Do you have anything else on the agenda?
There you go.
Thank you very much. And the Senate health care...
Committee we are.
Yeah, Senate Committee on Health Care and Veterans Affairs is adjourned.
Committee on Health Care is adjourned.
Thank you very much.